And good Thursday afternoon, June 11th. It's 3 o'clock. And this program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to community news covering the towns of Marlborough, Hudson, Harvard, Stowe, and Bolton. This program is sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Ashland, Bolton, and Harvard. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we'll be bringing you news from the Community Advocate, Harvard Press, Stowe Independent, and Bolton Independent. We're reading the Marlborough-Hudson Community Advocate, the June 5th edition, the Harvard Press June 5th, and the Independent of Stowe and Bolton, the June 4th editions. This is Tim Elms, along with Bob Brady, reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I'm going to start with the Independent of Stowe and Bolton. And this one is Stowe Police Department announces new patrol officer. The Stowe Police Department is excited to announce that we have hired a new patrol officer. Joshua Lampert started at the Police Academy on June 1st. Upon successful completion of the academy, he will start his field training with our department. Joshua brings relevant, practical experience through his work as a security patrol officer with Signal of South Coast. In that role, he conducted both vehicle and foot patrols across multiple jurisdictions in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, ensuring the safety and security of properties, residents, and the public. His responsibilities included responding to conflicts and emergency situations in a calm and controlled manner, while maintaining effective communication with site management and fellow officers. His consistent preparation of detailed incident reports reflects a strong understanding of the importance of accurate documentation in public safety operations. Please join us in welcoming him to the Stowe community. And this one is Bolton Parks and Recreation Update. The Bolton Parks and Recreation Commission would like to officially welcome our two newest commissioners, Mackenzie Lutz and Marissa Miller, to the commission. We're excited to have them join our team as we continue working to build community through programs, events, and recreation opportunities for residents of all ages. On May 16th, Parks and Recreation proudly partnered with Bolton Youth Sports for the equipment exchange at Memorial Field. It was wonderful seeing families come together to donate, swap, and pick up sports equipment for the upcoming seasons. We also participated in Memorial Day activities throughout town, visiting local cemeteries to honor those who served, followed by coffee and treats shared with the community at Memorial Field. Looking ahead, we have several exciting events coming up, including our community walking group, Puzzle Palooza, and the Concerts on the Common Summer Series. We also encourage families to register early for Bolton Summer Camp and swimming lessons, as spots continue to fill quickly. We're always looking for volunteers and community sponsors to help support parks and recreation programs and events. Community involvement is what helps these programs continue to grow and succeed. Follow us at Bolton Parks and Recreation on Facebook for updates on events, programs, and community announcements. Dwyer honored with statewide Civilian Achievement Award. Phoenix Dwyer, business manager for the Stowe Police Department, was recognized with the Civilian Achievement Award at the 2026 Spirit of Mali Awards ceremony held May 27th at the Irish Cultural Center in Canton. The award is presented by the Massachusetts Association of Women in Law Enforcement, MALI, which recognizes women in law enforcement and related professions for exceptional service, leadership, and contributions to their communities. The Civilian Achievement Award honors civilian women working within the law enforcement field who distinguish themselves through outstanding accomplishments and who have gone above and beyond to support and enhance the criminal justice profession. In announcing the award, Mally congratulated Dwyer for receiving the honor at its annual Spirit of Mally ceremony. The Stowe Police Department praised Dwyer's contributions of the department and community, noting that she has played a key role in several outreach initiatives. According to the department, Dwyer spearheaded Stowe's first participation in National Night Out, a community event that brought residents and first responders together. She also coordinated a domestic violence awareness event with the Gabby Petito Foundation, launched the department's therapy dog program featuring Maverick, and organized a large rolling food drive benefiting the local food pantry. Many of you may not know her name, but Phoenix Dwyer is behind so much of what makes the Stowe Police Department connected to this community, the department said in a social media post announcing the award. The department added that the recognition reflects Dwyer's contributions not only to the police department, but to the broader Stowe community. Mally Spirit Awards program was established to recognize women whose careers exemplify excellence in performance, leadership, mentoring, courage, and community service. National Night Out planning underway. After a successful event last year, the Stowe Police Department is planning another National Night Out event to be held on August 4th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. At the Center School in Stowe. Organizers say it's rain or shine. It will be the same format that we had last year, noted Stowe Police Department business manager Phoenix Dwyer, who is inviting the community to take part. We have spots for about 30 local community organizations and businesses, vendors that would like to participate. National Night Out is a nationwide community-building campaign that promotes police-community partnerships and neighborhood camaraderie. The goal is to make communities safer by building a trust between police officers and residents through positive interactions. Last year, that included a dunk tank with Police Chief Solis and Fire Department Chief Barry Evers, hay rides, canine demonstrations, and other activities. This year, there is a similar family fun focus. There will be a large inflatable game, face painting, touch a truck with all public safety organizations, fire and DPW. Chase from Paw Patrol will be walking around to take photos with people, a landing from Life Flight, pending weather, and a state canine demonstration, said Dwyer. Cousin's food truck will be there, and we are working on securing a couple other food truck options as well. Last year was such a great turnout, and we are looking forward to another great event, said Dwyer. If you're a local vendor or community organization and are interested in having a table at our event, please email pdwyer@stowemass.gov. Stowe Police seek applications for Lake Boone officer position. The Stowe Police Department is accepting applications for a Lake Boone officer, a position focused on law enforcement, public safety, and boating patrols on Lake Boone. This is meant to be a part-time weekend position and a way to enjoy Lake Boone and interact with Stowe's residents. Noted the Stowe Police Department in response to inquiries on its Facebook page, adding, this would be an eight-hour-a-week position with hourly compensations ranging from $27.61 to $29.75 based on experience. According to the department, the officer will be responsible for enforcing federal, state, and local laws, responding to calls for service, conducting investigations, and promoting safe boating practices on the lake. Duties will include assisting with accident investigations, preparing reports, testifying in court when necessary, and providing emergency medical care as a first responder. Applicants must be at least 21 years old, post-certified, and graduates of a Massachusetts Police Academy, Candidates must also possess a valid Mass Class D driver's license, pass criminal and traffic record checks, complete physical and psychological examinations, and obtain boating certification. The position is part of the department's ongoing efforts to provide police services and ensure public safety on Lake Boone and throughout the community. The department describes the role as an opportunity to combine public service with outdoor work while helping protect the community's waterways. Every day is different on Lake Boone, the department noted in its recruitment materials, emphasizing the position's mix of law enforcement responsibilities and community engagement. Interested candidates may submit a resume to stowpolice@stowmass.gov. Can you give this pet a home? Royalty isn't just for humans. Princess the Cat, currently at Ahimsa Haven Animal Rescue, has a regal bearing. She's 8 years old, and she can be shy with new people. However, like true royalty, she is gracious with her subjects and can make people around her feel like they've won the lottery when she snuggles close to your side. Volunteers report that she is a smart kitty who is independent but also affectionate with those she trusts. She definitely needs to be the only four-legged inhabitant of her castle and prefers a home without canines or fellow felines. She does have a treatable condition, and I cannot pronounce it, on her belly. That may sound scary, but it's well managed with medication, and her adoption fee is just $80. As always, cats that are ready to be adopted are spayed, neutered, have age-appropriate shots, are microchipped, and that is it. Worm defleed and FEL, FIV tested. And that is Royalty Princess the Cat. Bolton eyes infrastructure and agriculture. The Bolton Select Board met on May 28th and approved a new appointment to the Agricultural Commission, 2 liquor license amendments expanding Sunday service hours, and several administrative and infrastructure-related items. The Select Board appointed Amber Thompson to the Agricultural Commission for a 3-year term expiring June 30th, 2028. Agricultural Commission member Kevin Machnick told the Select Board that Thompson has been attending meetings for several months and actively participating in discussions. He noted that she is involved in the local agricultural community and raises animals in Bolton. Machnick said the appointment brings the commission to 4 of its 5 authorized members, In addition to the existing $50 fee, while highlighting several positive developments, Albavaro cautioned that several budget accounts remain under pressure. And I'm going to skip out of this one because I think I chopped and pasted and it's not coming together. So we're going to move on to this one here. First author talk at the newly renovated Randall Library. Randall Library is about to host the very first author talk in the newly renovated space. On Tuesday, June 9th, which it has done, we'll have the privilege of hosting Christopher C. Gorham, the author of Matisse at War, Art and Resistance in Nazi-Occupied France. I was first lucky enough to meet Gorham during a book signing he held at the Independent Bookstore Day last year. At that time, he was promoting his previous book, The Confidant, the untold story of the women who helped win World War II and shape modern America. I was extremely impressed by how knowledgeable and passionate he spoke about its subject. The subject was Anna Rosenberg. Therefore, when he asked whether I would be willing to read and review an advanced copy of his next book, I excitedly agreed. Truthfully, before starting Matisse at War, my knowledge of the artist was only cursory. I could recognize his more famous works on sight. I knew roughly when his most prolific times had been, and had heard of his association with another famous figures at the time, namely Picasso. After that brief introduction, I had little understanding of how interesting the man was. He liked to let his artwork speak for him, but those of us who are less fluent in the language of painting may have missed much of his messages. Gorham has proved a phenomenal translator. Let's take a short break, and we'll get some more news from Bob.
Have you heard about the audio journal show, Young at Heart? It's okay to be young at heart. The show is about listening to simple stories about simple and happy tales of life. By listening to Young at Heart, you will experience the delight and wonder of being, well, young at heart. And since laughter is the best medicine, many of the stories will also make you smile, chuckle, or even laugh out loud. So pull up a comfy chair, take off your shoes, and bend your ears to the audio journal show, Young at Heart, every Saturday and Sunday at 2 o'clock p.m.
This is Bob Brady with Audio Journal. The time is 3:16. I'm going to read articles from the Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate. You can do a lot of good. Roger Downing reflects on 30 years as a Hudson Police Department officer, by Paul Hopkins. Hudson Police Department Lieutenant Roger Downing has seen a lot in his nearly 30 years on the police force. Downing, who plans to retire in January, has lived in Hudson his entire life and dedicated his career to the town. Being a police officer runs in the family. Downing's father, John, was an officer for 34 years, including 5 years as chief. Their tenures as members of the department overlap for about 8 years. Today, Downing's oldest son, James, has been with the Hudson Police Department for about 7 years. I was influenced by the stories my father would tell, and I saw him in uniform and visited the station from time to time, said Downing. I saw a lot of the good and exciting things my dad did. I suppose that drew me into it. It might sound corny, but you can do a lot of good and help a lot of people, Downing added. People don't call the police when they're having a good day. They call the police when they're having their worst day. And we deal with that day in and day out over and over. He's seen it all over the decades. In March, he responded to a scene of an alleged murder, and then the next call could have been something as mundane as a barking dog. Being a police officer for 30 years teaches you a lot about people, he said. And a veteran officer can usually size up a situation quickly. It's like that saying, a front row seat to the greatest show on earth. You see all kinds of things, he said. As for Hudson itself, where he has spent his life, Downing is optimistic about the future. It was a working class mill town when I started, and Main Street was a couple of hair salons, a few bars, and a package store. That was about it, he said. Downtown isn't the only thing that has changed. Technology is the most obvious difference between today and 1996 when he joined as a reserve officer, he said. We didn't have computers in the cruisers when I started. It was a light bar, a siren, and a radio, he joked. Everything was handwritten. You'd call something into dispatch, and you'd wait, and they would run it and get it back to you. After retirement, Downing has options. Nothing is set in stone, but I definitely want to continue working, he said, noting he is only in his mid-50s. He and his wife of 33 years, Kathy, have 3 children and 1 grandchild. Local developer donates $224,000 to city for infrastructure improvements. A major developer donated $224,000 to Marlboro on May 26 in an effort to assist with improving ball fields, maintaining trails, and planning a proposed fire station. Ferris Development, which won a special permit from Marlboro last winter to develop a condominium complex on Lizotte Drive, agreed to contribute $100,000 designated for improvements to local ball fields, $50,000 for the expansion and enhancement of public trails, and $74,000 to support the development of the proposed West Side Fire Station. The funds for the fire station will be paid into the West Side Fire Station Mitigation Stabilization Fund prior to building permits being issued. Mayor J. Christian Dumais accepted the funds on behalf of the city, but emphasized that the city council gets the credit for shepherding the Ferris project through the permitting process. Councilor Mark Vital, a member of the city's Recreation Commission and a longtime sports coach, was also present for the presentation. David Ferris, founder and CEO of Ferris Development, told the Community Advocate that the firm originally cut our teeth and started our business here in Marlboro because of its business-friendly climate. He said the company has a lot of success working with the city's Economic Development Office and said there is a deep trust with Marlboro and the city's leadership. Ferris said his development group is working in several communities to redevelop underused assets, adding that his upcoming project at 130 Lizotte Drive is an office building turning into critical housing. The permit granted last year allowed Ferris to build as many as 187 one- and two-bedroom condominiums in three separate structures. "We're trying to take these abandoned assets and put them back on the tax rolls," Ferris continued. "We've been welcomed by various communities, and Marlboro is one of the greatest." Asked about the bigger picture of housing shortages in the state, Ferris said he would like to see the Massachusetts legislature adopt a broad, overarching piece of legislation that would give broad state-level approval to convert office properties to housing communities. He said such a change could bring hundreds of thousands of new housing units on the market. Leadership Changes in Marlboro Schools by Leah Bosalil. After the announced departure of Marlboro High Principal Stephen Sierpina and the promotion of Whitcomb School Principal Angela House to Assistant Superintendent, the district has officially secured a new leadership for 2026-27 academic year. Sarah Casey has been selected to lead Marlboro High School as its next principal. She started on June 1st. Casey has 15 years of experience in education and currently serves as the Director of Alternative Education for Marlboro Public Schools, overseeing alternative education programs, managing the Marlboro Evening Teams Accelerated Study / Accelerated Learning Academy budget, leading professional learning communities, overseeing the restorative center at the high school, and conducting staff evaluations. She was previously a summer credit recovery coordinator and a student intervention lead teacher at Marlboro High School. Tara Sobolewski has been appointed principal of First Lieutenant Charles W. Whitcomb School. She will start July 1st. Sobolewski has 15 years of experience in education and is currently an assistant principal at Whitcomb Middle School, helping with instructional leadership and school operations. She was previously an educational team leader for 6 years, an attendance academy administrator, and a summer Title I coordinator. According to the school district, these appointments reflect its ongoing commitment to transforming education by recruiting and retaining dedicated, high-quality staff. Checkerboard celebrates 35 years as a Hudson favorite by Evan Walsh. In 1991, Chris Siros and his family took a chance. a veteran of the restaurant industry, Ciro's teamed up with his sister-in-law, Jill Smith, and father-in-law, Joe Martocci, known as a really good cook, to found Checkerboard's Restaurant and Bar in Hudson. It started as just four walls and a ceiling, Ciro said, and he put everything, including his house, on the line to open the restaurant. It was a big risk and a big commitment, but also a labor of love. When exercising, I have a water bottle in one hand and a phone in the other, because someone is probably going to call me about Checkerboards, said Ciro's. You have to stay on top of things. I applaud anyone, especially in the restaurant business, who can stay on top of it because it's a tough business. Checkerboards is now celebrating 35 years in business. Over more than three decades, the restaurant has become a Hudson staple because of its reliably excellent food and an unwavering focus on the customer experience. To stay in business, you have to have great food, you have to be absolutely clean, and you have to have great service. You really have to have all three. If you have two of the three, then you're going to be out of business, said Ciro's. Checkerboards is a business built on doing things the right way. An owner is always on site, ensuring that the restaurant is properly managed. In an era when restaurants are shrinking meals in an effort to cut costs, Checkerboards has stayed generous, giving large portions to customers. Everything is made to order, down to the tomato sauce. Though pizza is popular and tasty at Checkerboards, there's much more on the menu. Options include fresh fish, steaks, a variety of homemade pasta dishes, salads, soups, and more. With so many diverse offerings, the restaurant has become a popular family destination. There's also a full bar with dozens of unique creations. People still think we're just a pizza place, but we seat 200 people. We have a full liquor license. You can get seafood, great Italian food at Checkerboards. That's why people come back, Ciro's told the Community Advocate. He added, nothing is processed. There's lots of prep work. We make our own sauce like the old days, 8 hours to make the sauce. Once people try how good the food is, they always return. We have a lot of regulars here. Over 35 years, Checkerboards has had generations of wonderful customers, according to Ciro's. The same can be said for the restaurant staff. In some cases, young Hudson residents have worked at Checkerboards, grown up, and then sent their children to work at the restaurant. It's indicative of how Hudson locals view the establishment. It's commitment. It's staying on top of everything, said Ciro's. As for how the name Checkerboards came about, we were just looking for something catchy, Ciro said with a laugh. And it says Checkerboards Restaurant and Bar is located at 10 Technology Drive in Hudson. Multiple police agencies help apprehend three suspects after attempted car break-in and subsequent crash. A multi-agency response led to the arrest of three individuals. At about 1:28 p.m. on May 25th, the Marlboro Police Department responded to Jelloni Park after a report of an attempted vehicle theft. A victim reported that while resting inside his vehicle, an individual opened the driver's door. Upon recognizing the car was occupied, the suspect fled and entered a waiting vehicle. A short time later, officers attempted to stop a vehicle matching the description provided. The operator fled from police, nearly striking an officer who was working a traffic detail. The vehicle subsequently crashed on Parmenter Road, overturned, and all three occupants fled into a nearby wooded area. The vehicle had been stolen earlier that day from Wayland. A large-scale search that involved patrol officers, detectives, canine teams, and aviation assets was immediately launched. The police ultimately located and apprehended all three suspects. The suspects were not identified in a press release, two are juveniles. The Marlboro Police Department, Framingham Police Department, Hudson Police Department, Sudbury Police Department, Southborough Police Department, Wayland Police Department, and Massachusetts State Police helped with the incident. And now, let's listen to a public service announcement, and then Tim will bring us more news.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss? If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.
And this is Tim, and it's 3:30 in the afternoon. I'm gonna move over to the Harvard Press, and this one is: Harvard challenges governor's proposal to change process for rezoning Devens, by John Osborne. The Harvard Select Board met Tuesday night with KP Law attorney to sharpen a letter opposing a provision of Governor Maura Healey's Mass Winds bill that would give Mass Development sole authority to propose changes to Devens' zoning bylaws and replace the three-town supertown meeting approval process that has governed the community since 1993. The board's position is unambiguous. It wants no change. The letter was drafted by Victor Normand, chair of the Harvard Devens Jurisdiction Committee, at the board's request, Michael D. Ortenzio, substituting for the town's regular counsel, Jeff Blake, attended Tuesday's meeting to advise the board on the legislature's authority to make such changes and to help sharpen the town's arguments against them. D. Ortenzio told the board that while the legislature has authority to amend any Massachusetts law, including laws passed by ballot question, the proposal raises serious concerns about democratic process, removing meaningful participation by the three towns in decisions that directly affect them. The board did not vote on final wording Tuesday, but wants to get the letter to State Senator James Eldridge and State Rep. Dan Cena quickly, while there is still time to influence the outcome. Eldridge, who also represents Ayer, has urged the town to move quickly. The Joint Committee on Economic Development and Emerging Technologies held a public hearing on the bill in May and must report by July 18. Once the board is satisfied with the draft, the letter will go to Eldridge and Cena, with copies to the select boards of Ayer and Shirley, State Senator John Cronin, who represents Shirley, and Mass Development. Under a 1993 law governing the redevelopment of Fort Devens, any change to the Devens reuse plan or zoning bylaws requires approval at a supertown meeting. A joint convening of registered voters from Harvard, Ayer, and Shirley, with each town meeting with voting separately. Section 10A of the Mass Winds Bill would replace the process starting January 1st, 2027. And this one is Harvard something $1 million to ensure affordable apartments at Emerson Green. And this is by John Osborne again. The Harvard Select Board voted unanimously Tuesday night to approve a $1 million investment by the town's Municipal Affordable Housing Trust to subsidize 12 affordable apartments in a 46-unit rental duplex complex being built at Emerson Green in Devens. A decade in the making, the deal will nearly halve Harvard's affordable housing gap, earn 2 years of protection from unwanted development under state law, and add much-needed affordable housing in the region. The 5-0 vote authorized the trust to spend $1 million of its affordable housing fund to reduce rents on 12 apartments to levels that low-income families can afford, capped for four-person households earning up to $132,000 a year, or 80% of the area's median income. Harvard sits below the threshold at which state law shields towns from unwanted development. Under Chapter 40B, developers can override local zoning in towns where fewer than 10% of homes are deed-restricted as affordable. Harvard currently has 126 qualifying units on the state's subsidized housing inventory and needs 220 to reach safety. Because Devens is not subject to Chapter 40B development, there adds to Harvard's housing count without improving its SHI standing. By subsidizing 12 units, Harvard qualifies the building for a state rule that counts all units in a rental complex toward the SHI when at least 25% are affordable. Bringing all 46 into Harvard's count, the board made its approval contingent on written confirmation from town council that all 46 units be credited. The region surrounding Devens has a critically low housing vacancy rate. Fewer than 1.1% of homes are currently available to rent or buy, and median home prices have more than doubled since 2012. The apartment complex, which will be known as Emerson Green Residences, would add 46 rental apartments to a market where rentals are especially scarce. The all-electric, fully accessible building comprises two attached structures and a shared lobby with 17 one-bedroom units, 25 two-bedroom units, and 4 three-bedroom units. One side of the building faces the development's Central Park. Devens requires workforce housing in new developments, but not the deeply affordable units that count toward Harvard's SHI. The trust's $1 million bought what no regulation required. The trust's affordable housing fund currently totals $1.4 million. Roughly $400,000 would remain after the investment. Ariel Jennings, chair of the Municipal Affordable Housing Trust, said the per-unit cost of the subsidy, just under $84,000, falls at the low end of a range she found when surveying comparable investments in surrounding towns. In an interview before Tuesday's meeting, Jennings audited now community's principal, Dan, built 26 more remain but cannot proceed until instruction is underway on the rental building. Gainsborough said he spent years for a partner with the financial strength and experience to operate a rental building, a fundamentally different business, he noted, than building homes for sale. He said Tuesday that he had found that partner in Elite Home Builders, which will construct and operate the complex. Town declines developer's request to apply now for water sewer grant in multifamily district. This is by Valerie Hurley. The town will not apply for a grant to bring water and sewer to its multifamily district, at least not now. So said the select board, which on Tuesday voted to take no action on a request from developers to apply on a June 3rd deadline for a state grant to bring water and sewer to the district. Proponents of a 234-unit development adjacent to Boston Badminton on Air Road had asked the board 2 weeks ago to apply for $5 million toward a $9 million system to serve the rental units and several existing homes on Lancaster County Road. One after another, select board members said they supported the proposed housing, but that applying for the grant too early in the process might be a strategic error and could also be financially risky. Do we need housing? Absolutely. Do we need this amount of rental units? I don't know, said member Susan Mary Redinger. But in any case, she said, applying now was a bit out of order. The town administrator, she said, had advised the board that the state favored shovel-ready projects, yet developers have not submitted an application to the planning board. I want to make sure we have every chance of success in getting these grants, she said, adding. I'd also like to understand better how we can make water and sewer available for the Ayer Road District, not just for one development. And this one, shifting perspectives, finding beauty and benefit in a rewild landscape. Patches of common milkweed for monarch butterflies appear here and there. Three different goldenrods, black-eyed Susans, and New York ironweed intermingle in another corner of the property. Fern fronds unfurl amid a patch of pachysandra. A red-tailed hawk screams overhead. A walk around Michelle Girard's yard reveals a landscape in transition. A short drive from Girard's home is Catherine Friccioni's property. When Friccioni moved to her current home years ago, someone shared information with her about invasive plants. She looked around the property, realized there was an extensive row of thriving burning bush shrubs, also known as winged, can't pronounce the word, and started removing them. As she considered how she wanted her landscape to function in the future, her native plant journey began. Girard's answer, it's all about relationships. She points out an area of jewelweed and says, years ago, decades ago, I would have been out here weeding every single one of them out. After learning jewelweed is a primary source of nectar for ruby-throated hummingbirds on their southern migration, Girard changed course. She said, I leave it. It's just like the milkweed. Too important. Monarch butterflies co-evolved with plants in the milkweed family and depend on them for the rest of their life cycle. And I'm going to read the police log. In the past week, police made 45 motor vehicle stops, 31 resulting in verbal warnings, and 14 in written warnings or citations. Officers also checked on 2 disabled vehicles and made 3 well-being checks. On Tuesday, May 26th, at 4:10 p.m., a 911 caller reported their van had been struck by another vehicle on Ayer Road, and the other vehicle had left the scene without stopping. At 8:30 p.m., police transported a person to the Worcester County Jail in West Boylston. At 11:34, a resident who has a business in Boxboro told police that someone had left an Apple AirTag in one of his vehicles. Boxboro police were notified, too. On Wednesday, May 27th, at 10:29 a.m., someone reported a crash on Poor Farm Road. A driver had fallen asleep at the wheel. The car hit a propane truck and then went off the road. No one was injured. On Thursday, May 28th, at 3:31 p.m., a Brown Road resident called 911 to say she was away from home and her son was at the house alone. He had just called her, saying a gray truck had pulled into the driveway. When police checked, they found the truck belonged to a friend of the boy's sister. At 6:14 p.m., a Bolton Road resident called with suspicions about a man who had come to their door trying to sell them solar panels. On Friday, May 29th, at 8:58 a.m., an Ayer Road resident called police to report someone had dumped pieces of metal and other trash in his driveway. At 11:56 a.m., a hospital called, asking for help in reaching the son of a woman who had been hospitalized. On Saturday, May 30th, at 6:46 a.m., a 911 caller reported a crash on Route 2 westbound. State police had jurisdiction. At 7:42, someone called about a tree branch down on Mass Ave, and an officer removed it. At 8:10, a similar report came in from West Bear Hill Road. And again, an officer removed the hazard. At 10:27, a small tree fell on Woodside Road, and the Department of Public Works was notified. Let's take another short break, and we will pass it back over to Bob.
Hello, listeners. Would you like to hear news from Holden, Paxton, Princeton, Rutland, and Sterling that you're not likely to hear on commercial television and radio? Tune in to Audio Journal every Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal, the time, 3:45. I'm going to continue with articles from the Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate. The branches of Marlboro director honored for innovative Alzheimer's care. The branches of Marlboro, a benchmark assisted living and mind and memory care community, announced mind and memory care director Eni Fernandez of Marlboro has been named a recipient of the 2026 Memory Care Innovation Awards from the WTWH Healthcare. She is one of just 13 senior living professionals nationwide who is being recognized for advancing dementia care. The annual awards honor leaders who are redefining cognitive care delivery and shaping the future of aging through innovative, high-quality approaches that improve outcomes for individuals living with memory-related conditions and those who care for them. Fernandez has been with the branches of Marlboro since the community opened in 2019. She is being recognized for her transformative leadership and her innovative, people-centered approach, which has redefined what exceptional assisted living and memory care can look like. With decades of experience in clinical care and dining services, she brings a holistic perspective to the senior assisted living community that enhances both the resident experience at the branches and overall team performance. Eni is truly the heart of our community, said Julia Hannon, executive director of the branches of Marlboro. She leads by example and is always the first to support frontline staff. Through her compassion, creativity, and relentless drive to improve, Eni is not only advancing memory care, she is setting the standard for it. Fernandez's leadership is both practical and deeply empathetic, ensuring all residents can participate in meaningful experiences regardless of their cognitive or physical disabilities. Drawing on her background in culinary leadership, she has also transformed the dining experience into one that is both therapeutic and engaging, creatively tailoring environments and approaches to individual preferences and abilities. Located in Metro West on Route 85 next to Marlboro High School, the branches of Marlboro Senior Assisted Living Community helps residents discover and connect to what's meaningful and possible at every stage of their lives. The community features an open concept design and flexible floor plans that encourage engagement. On-site services and amenities include all-day restaurant-style dining, beauty, wellness, and concierge services, and programs tailored to residents' interests. Bus drivers and monitors in Marlboro go on strike. Once again, bus drivers and monitors who serve Marlboro area schools are on strike. Teamsters Local 170, which represents school bus drivers, has been unable to reach a contract settlement with NRT, a private bus company. The strike, which is ongoing as the Community Advocate went to print, began on Wednesday, May 27th. Drivers are trying to negotiate more affordable health care and better retirement benefits, according to several reports. The drivers also went on strike in 2023, that lasted for 3 days. In a statement, Marlboro Public Schools Superintendent Jason DeFalco said replacement drivers have been brought in and there have been no delays or changes in procedures. We are hopeful NRT and the Teamsters will come to a speedy agreement. In the meantime, we are working to ensure that there are minimal disruptions to our students and families. While they work out the details of their successor contract, our focus in Marlboro Public Schools remains steadfast on our students, he added. The strike is also affecting Advanced Math and Science Academy, AMSA, transportation. In a statement posted to the AMSA website, Executive Director Lisa C. Mobley wrote that it is important to clarify that AMSA is not a party to these negotiations. This is a private matter between NRT management and their unionized employees. However, she wrote, the outcome directly impacts AMSA families. Marlboro Mayor J. Christian DeMays issued a statement May 27th. We remain optimistic that NRT and the Teamsters Local 170 will reach an agreement soon. In the meantime, we are taking steps to minimize any impact on our students and families. The city and Marlboro Public Schools remain fully committed to supporting and prioritizing our students, he wrote. On June 1st, NRT released a statement. NRT Bus is committed to reaching a fair agreement that supports employees and is responsible to the community. We encourage the union to return to the bargaining table today in good faith and avoid regressive tactics. We are eager to restore routine service to support our students, families, and the school district. And now I've got an article from the Footprints of History, Stowe History, researched and written by Stephanie Lewis. The Hans Ericsson Family. Around the turn of the last century, there was a wave of immigrants from Northern Europe who emigrated to Stowe and Maynard. Some were from Denmark, including the Ericsson brothers, Hans and John. They would each go on to lead successful lives, and their sons would follow in their footsteps. Hans and Frederick Jensen Ericsson were the parents of Hans and John. Hans was born in Denmark in 1871 and arrived in Massachusetts in 1887. John was born in Denmark around 1875 and arrived in Massachusetts in 1891. In 1896, Hans married Anna Mary Peterson, who had emigrated in 1894. They would go on to have 4 children, Hans H.A., Olga, Sylvia, and George. The couple naturalized in 1907. In the 1900 census, Hans and Mary, as it appears she went by at this time, were renting a house on Concord Street in Maynard. By the 1910 census, they owned their own farm on White Pond Road in Stowe, just down the street from the almshouse. The 1930 census shows the family living on Great Road in Stowe between Bradley Lane and Hastings Street. At that time, Hans was working as a dry finisher in a mill, likely the American Woolen Company in Maynard. In 1940, according to the census, Hans was working as a truck driver for a milk concern, living just down the street from his brother to the west and his daughter and her husband just to the east. Ralph Fuller's Stowe Things states that Hans had operated a dairy farm but sold the cows sometime in the 1920s and established a dairy on Great Road. Fuller says he bought his milk from Stowe farmers and delivered it throughout the area, which would match the 1940 census as a truck driver. Hans and Mary's son, Hans Henry Alfred, H.A., Ericsson, was born in 1896. He fought in World War I before marrying Mary Boyd in 1923 in Stowe. Hans and Mary had a daughter, Arlene, who later married Joseph Fraser. Hans H. A. Erickson took over the family dairy business and moved it just down the street to Maynard at 10 Great Road. According to Fuller, it was this Hans who changed the spelling of the family name from Erickson with an S-E-N at the end to Erickson with an S-O-N at the end. Hans H. A. died in 1971, according to his gravestone. The website for Erickson's Ice Cream states that the dairy, founded by Hans Sr., was started in 1901 and sold to Hans H. A. and his wife Mary when he retired. It was 1937 that Hans H. A. moved the business down the road to its present location where the ice cream stand opened. Their daughter Arlene and her husband Joe took over the business in 1961, buying it from her parents. Arlene maintained ownership of Erickson's Dairy until her death in 2017, at which point it passed down to their three sons. Their son Thomas and his wife Irene currently operate the business, which turns 89 this year. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org. This is Bob Brady, along with Tim Elms. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. In American democracy, elected officials work for the people. With the nonprofit American Bird Conservancy, Hardy Kern takes action for birds by helping people reach out to lawmakers at every level of government.
They can only act on the information that they are given by the people that they represent. So if they're not hearing anything from their constituents about how important bird conservation is, or the Endangered Species Act, or habitat preservation, then they don't know what they need to do. They don't know that that's something that their constituents care about.
Hardy says just a few minutes of effort can go a long way.
It only takes 5 or 10 calls for something to be flagged for them as important, and for a staffer to start running it up the chain and say, this is something that we're hearing about. Even if you pick just one thing every month, even just one thing a year, and say, this is important to me, I'm going to speak up about it, I'm going to send an email, I'm going to make a call, that is going to make a difference, because wildlife can't speak for itself. It's up to us to do that.
Learn more about legislative actions that support bird conservation in Season 8 of our long-form show, Bring Birds Back. Available in your favorite podcast app and on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Jonice Franklin.
When my dad started to lose his vision, we were worried. Sure, his doctor gave me and my mom some handouts, and I did my fair share of research. But we had no idea how much of a challenge vision loss would be or how it would impact his quality of life. That's why I was so glad we discovered Mass Commission for the Blind. They work with my dad, and they will work with you and your loved one as well to develop future plans and new skills and assistive technology. They even helped Dad get access to talking books and newspapers. He was so excited.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.